This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. You know, I'm just watching some of the network news here at the top of the hour, and I kind of wonder, they've still got the banner, Trump, the first 100 days. What about the first 100 hours? They're going to have to change that because they've been rocking it so much with all the stuff going on in Washington, D.C. Glad you're with us. You can always check out the podcast at 971talk.com. Of course, on the Odyssey app, wherever you download your podcasts. If you missed anything, you can go back and listen to it. We had formerly state representative, now Senator Adam Schnelting on a little earlier in the 7 o'clock hour, talking about several bills that you might be interested in that are about to get heard up in Jeff City. Of course, dealing with maybe changing Amendment 3, allowing us to carry weapons on Metrolink to protect ourselves if need be, and forcing people out of the left lane. We already have stay right law. This would just add a penalty to it, like a $100 ticket if you got caught lingering too long in the left lane. That idea makes me very happy. It's a minor bill, but it makes me very happy. It's got a committee hearing coming up on that next week, I believe. So that's good. By the way, we are trying to honor our first responders. Just a quick reminder here. You can go on to our website, 971talk.com, and you can nominate your favorite first responder or somebody you've had a great interaction with, maybe a police officer who didn't give you a ticket for staying in the left lane too long, maybe an EMS worker, whoever you've encountered, a firefighter, someone you know personally who goes and does a great job every day with a great attitude. Nominate them. If we select them, we will feed them and their department from Grillmaster Tony, and I'll deliver the food out there myself. We do that every month. So go to 971talk.com and be sure and check that out. Still to come this morning, we're going to talk to Shannon Bream from Fox News Sunday. Pam Bondi got sworn in yesterday. They passed her nomination. She immediately went and Clarence Thomas gave her the oath of office, and she's now the Attorney General, and she has wasted no time. So we're going to talk to Shannon about that a little bit, maybe about this USAID issue, and then our buddy Griff Jenkins. And again, you know, we always ask, where in the world is Griff? I don't know. I don't know where he is because he hasn't been on Fox the last couple of days that I've seen. So we'll find out where they've got him right now. And of course, even when he's on surfing vacations, he calls us. That's the kind of guy you're dealing with there with Griff. Yeah, he's coming up about 8:35. Carl, let's get to our shortlist, please.
The Mark Cox shortlist.
Think of any girl being robbed of that opportunity because a male athlete wants to take her spot or compete in her sport or bump her off the roster is heartbreaking. And that's ultimately why it is so important that we all stand up for this. And again, why this executive order is such a win.
Yeah, Riley Gaines, of course, we had one of her counterparts on yesterday who was speaking out on National Women in Sports Day. And what a great executive order by the president banning men in women's sports.
Marco is going to make clear America categorically rejects transgender lunacy. We want them to change everything having to do with the Olympics.
Yeah, I thought that was great as well, because after he signed it, he pointed out the Secretary of State is now going to inform all these countries if they're coming to bring competitions to the United States, they will abide by our rules.
They're screaming about Elon Musk over there, but hey, George Soros and his boy are okay. So I would tell my colleagues across the other side of the aisle, take your salty tears and sit right back down.
Nancy Mace with some savage comments in a hearing yesterday on USAID and how this money was being wasted all over the place. I mean, it was just really kind of pathetic.
I was going to build a beautiful, beautiful ballroom like I have it. Mar-a-Lago, as beautiful as it can be. It was going to cost about $100 million. I offered to do it. They just didn't know what to do. They sort of said, this is good, but they had no idea. So I'm going to try and make the offer to myself, you know?
Did you have Donald Trump putting an addition on the White House on your bingo card?
I did not.
He's apparently been thinking about this for a while.
I don't think I've had a lot of what he's done on my bingo card. Even though he's kept his promises that he made, I didn't expect it to happen this fast.
You know, it's funny, but if you've never been to the White House, I know a lot of people have toured it over the years. If you've never been there, you might have the impression that it's this huge mansion. It's really not that big. And the East Room is the room they use for example, the EO he signed yesterday with all the girls in it. They did it in the East Room. I was in there actually when Stan Musial got his Medal of Freedom Award from Barack Obama. They sent me up there to cover that from Channel 4. So we're in there and I'm looking around and it's basically the size of a large conference room. That's about it. And you're limited on the number of either dignitaries or members of the media or whoever you can fit into that room. There's a limit on how big you can, how many people you can fit in there. So apparently Trump noticed this the last time he was president. And even after he left office, if I understand him here correctly, he reached back out to the Biden administration. He said, let me build us a ballroom onto that end of the White House, and we'll make the current East Room sort of the antechamber, and then you could go into a much bigger ballroom like I have at Mar-a-Lago. It'll be beautiful. It'll be the biggest, most beautiful ballroom you've ever seen. And I offered to do it at my expense, and I could never get an answer from the Biden administration. Listen to him tell this story in case you missed it.
I can't even get in. This room is packed, and I offered to build a ballroom. I'm very good at building ballrooms. I build beautiful ballrooms. And I actually offered to build a ballroom for the White House. I was going to build it right there. This was going to be the reception room. And then I was going to build a beautiful, beautiful ballroom like I have at Mar-a-Lago. As beautiful as it can be. It was going to cost about $100 million. I offered to do it. And I never heard back. I offered to do it to the Biden administration, very active administration. They didn't hear back. And I said again and again, 3-4 times, I said to top people, and they just didn't know what to do. They sort of said, this is good, but they had no idea. So I'm going to try and make the offer to myself, you know, because we could use a bigger room, right, Marshall? We could use a bigger room. President, would you like to build? Yeah, I would. We could use at the White House. It would actually be a beautiful addition. It's going to cost nothing. I'll spend the whole thing myself. We'll do a big, beautiful room, but we could use it at the White House. You know what they do when they have a big ceremony? To put up a tent. And somehow I think we've outgrown the tent stuff, right? Don't you?
Yeah. His favorite word is beautiful.
It's beautiful, big and beautiful.
So now with him being president, because it's not like it would be at the taxpayer's expense. So would he need anyone to sign off on that? Or with him being president,
general,
he could just do it as long as he pays for
it. I think the General Services Administration would be involved. But I don't know how that works. I'll be real honest with you. I'm talking out of school. It strikes me that somebody could donate the money for an addition like that. So maybe the president could donate the money to a fund that the GSA has, and then they could build it out of the money for that fund. But I almost feel like it would have to be a GSA project. Like, they couldn't let private contractors come in and build it. They might ultimately hire private contractors, But I don't know the answer to that. Maybe he would say, my crew will come in and do it for free. I mean, I just don't know how they would do that.
It's not even just the payment, I think, that would be a factor why some people would push back on it. But when you think of the White House, I mean, most of us can picture the White House, right?
Yes.
And it's just kind of this iconic building. So I could see some people saying, you know, why would you want to alter that? Unless you built it onto the back, and even then you'd be altering it. But
it would have to match
the
architecture,
vibes,
right?
Yeah. But also people could complain, well, you're even if it matched, you're still changing the way that it looks. This iconic building that's, I know it wasn't initially like that. Well, there was no White House.
Dependable.
What in the world? Scared me to death, sorry.
I'm trying to remember at what point it became what it is now.
Yes.
At what year? I don't remember which year that was.
Well, I don't know the answer to that either, but the biggest problem they might have with it would be the big gold embossed T that would be put on the floor of the room. They may not like that, so they might have to alter it a little bit.
Oh, this is going to be interesting.
It's going to be fun. Hold on, man. We're just 2 weeks into this, 2.5 weeks now. Coming up, Shannon Bream, Fox News Sunday. We'll be right back.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to 4 different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I do solemnly swear.
I, Pamela Bondi, do solemnly swear
that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
Get up, baby! Get up!
There's only one Shannon.
Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday. Shannon Bream on the line with us this morning. Shannon, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing fine. You obviously heard Pam Bondi being sworn in by Clarence Thomas there. She wasted no time. Did she, like, immediately defund sanctuary cities?
I mean, she's going after it. There is, you know, a list of priorities that she's got. And listen, she has been aligned with President Trump for a long time. People who know her from her stint as Florida Attorney General think this is exactly what you would expect from her. And that's what you're getting.
It wasn't there a question the last time there was some attempt to do this? There were lawsuits filed immediately questioning whether or not whoever did it in government had the authority to stop those federal funds from going to individual cities.
Yeah, and I think that you're going to see more of that. I think obviously everything with the new Trump administration is doing is immediately going to court. And I think that some of these lawsuits are already drafted. They know what is coming. But what's been interesting to me with this conversation about sanctuary cities this time around is that you do have members of the Trump inner circle saying, hey, it's possible we go after local officials who try to impede in any way or protect people who are here illegally. There's been a lot of conversation about this, including the back and forth between Border Czar Tom Homan and New Jersey's governor.
Yes.
So it's not just about trying to block the money, which that language is in the executive orders that came from President Trump. There's also language saying we may pursue civil and criminal penalties against people who block our efforts. And they keep saying that could include local officials and state officials.
I think I think it was the, with the Denver mayor who had said, go ahead and throw me in jail. So you're saying that it actually could come to that, where they would have the legal authority potentially to throw one of these officials in jail if they are in any way making it difficult or stopping the Trump administration from deporting people?
I think that in the end, I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but I think the Trump administration would want to check the optics of that.
Yeah.
I think there are Democrats who would say, ooh, this will be a win for me. Throw me in jail. You're going to look terrible that I'm trying to protect innocent people and grandmothers and, you know, babies and whatever. So I got to think that there would be more of a civil penalty situation probably if they tried to go after some of these officials. And I've watched this with many cases. You guys probably have too. People who are trying to stand up for something are much more likely to be willing to thrown in jail. It makes their point, and the optics tend to breed a lot of sympathy for them. When they're paying a daily fine of $1,000, $10,000, that adds up really quickly and often changes minds. It doesn't play the same publicly as getting thrown in jail.
Yeah, maybe that's why Phil Murphy backed off of his claim that he had an illegal living in his garage. I'm just guessing there.
Let's add up real quickly.
Shannon, have you seen the USAID reporting that some of this funding was going to Politico? I mean, as an organization that represented itself as a journalistic organization, even if I might have always perceived a slant to the reporting.
Yeah, I mean, the initial reporting that I saw said that it was for subscriptions, so that there were some foreign entities that were getting this. You know, I love an old-fashioned, like, hard copy of something. Yes. I like to get that. I used to love when I walked in the newsroom, there's stacks of newspapers there. That's kind of what I envisioned from the initial reporting on this, is that someone somewhere was saying, okay, we're going to have these U.S. publications. Politico is going to be one of them that we have in our operation, so people know what's going on in the U.S. But, you know, some more digging that I've heard about this morning sounds like there may be more to it than that. I haven't seen it personally, but that was my initial take on it.
Yeah, this thing just keeps getting uglier. And, you know, I heard the White House spokesman Caroline Leavitt make reference to this in her briefing the other day. But she said the rhetoric, the calls for war and violence in the street, if that was coming from Republicans, it strikes me there'd be, she said, a lot different tone in this room today.
Yeah, and what's interesting is I think a lot of folks in the mainstream media are now willing to admit that. They're having to stop and say, all right, if the shoe was on the other foot, how would we be reporting this? And I do think that it's affecting, you know, how people make decisions about what gets out there, because you're right. If you have a press conference where there are a number of people, some of them yelling, some of them very passionate, some of them talking about, you know, yeah, take it to the streets, this is war. It doesn't play as well, apparently, in the mainstream media when it comes from the right side of the aisle.
No, it certainly doesn't. I know there's a couple of confirmation hearings that might happen this week. Patel, is that right? Is he up next?
Yeah, I think he is, and also I think Russell votes to lead the OMB. He is the one that Democrats have really been most fervently, vocally upset about recently, because, you know, those are funding decisions.
Yes.
And there are big ways that you can control federal policy coming through the executive branch through those funding decisions. So Democrats are doing everything they can to slow these votes down. I think knowing almost all of them are guaranteed to cross the finish line, but they're going to try to make it as painful as possible for the Trump administration.
Yeah, well, I know Kilmeade asks you this all the time, but who's in your lineup besides him on Sunday?
Well, we are live from the Super Bowl on Sunday, and our exclusive on-set guest is Speaker Mike Johnson, who is in the middle of everything that's trying to be accomplished right now on Capitol Hill. He's got folks fighting against him, some within his own party and plenty across the aisle, but we'll do a deep dive on how they're planning to try to get the Trump agenda done with a lot of potential roadblocks there.
I think I heard Trump will be attending the Super Bowl,
I did
right?
hear that, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy, crazy place.
And Taylor Swift, right? That'll be the is Taylor
sure
Swift going to get more coverage
will,
than Trump?
I mean, listen, the president and Tay-Tay may be in the same box.
Gosh.
Maybe they find some common ground. I don't know.
That would be funny. Do you have a seat, Shannon, I'm assuming?
I do.
Good.
I do, only because I'm working, and yes. I am very grateful to Fox for the seat to go to. It should be a lot of fun.
All right, go Chiefs.
Oh, okay. We know where you're going.
All right. Shannon, we'll see you Sunday. Thank you.
Okay, see you then.
All right, take care. Shannon Bream there. Love getting her on here. Coming up, we're going to get to Griff Jenkins in just a couple of minutes. We'll find out where in the world he's reporting from this morning. Stay tuned.
And I think we just have to be right now, at this moment, on, you know, red alert mode.
In Kyiv, Ukraine, Griff Jenkins, Fox News. Along the southern border, Griff Jenkins, Fox News. At the White House, Griff Jenkins, Fox News. In St. Louis, Griff Jenkins, Fox News.
Tell me where in the world is
Griff Jenkins.
Watch your back.
Have you been Rickrolled before?
Good morning. Not only have I been Rickrolled, so when Rick Astley, true story, you can look it up on the Twitter feed going back however long ago, Rick Astley came out with a tour like 2 years ago. He went back on tour, and of course, I loved Never Gonna Give You Up, and so I just tweeted at him and said, Rick, I never gave you up, like the pun. And he retweeted it out, and we became like Twitter friends. And to this day, every time I hear that story, I think about how awesome Rick Astley is.
Who knew?
And Mark and Kim, I would never give you up either.
Well, thank you, Griff. We certainly appreciate that. Hey, is it true? I heard some of the reporting overnight that some of this USAID grant money went to like surfing expeditions for Griff Jenkins at some point in the past.
I can neither confirm nor deny such outrageous allegations, but there's always a chance that there was important work that needed to be done. Look, do you know, I just got moments ago, because in our inbox, we're on all these, congressional press releases, lists and stuff, just got a media advisory today. The Progressive Caucus of House lawmakers will hold a Fire Elon Musk press conference. That's coming soon.
Oh, wow.
We've got Ilhan Omar and Nydia Velasquez and the like that are going to scream. And as just an observation, there's some rich hypocrisy here that the Democrats who are defending unelected bureaucrats at places like USAID spending $40 billion in 2023 to go to taxpayer-wasted projects like the $1.5 million that went to an LGBTQ Serbian group to promote DEI, that they're now becoming unhinged, that an unelected Elon Musk is exposing it.
Well,
it's just rich with hypocrisy.
Well, it's also hypocrisy. I heard some of them yesterday. I don't know if it was Ayanna Pressley or I know that Elizabeth Warren went on and on about Elon Musk and how no one voted for him. And then somebody said, it's not fair that somebody can spend, you know, X amount of hundreds of millions of dollars to help somebody get elected and then, you know, advise them. And I'm thinking, wait a minute now, what did George Soros do with the Biden administration? What did he do with the Obama administration? He's a billionaire who spends a lot of his money to try to influence policy. And I don't know if that Musk is using his money to influence policy so much as the president said, hey, you got some great ideas. What do you think about reducing government waste?
Yeah. Well, that's never going to happen because that's obviously not of interest to him. But, you know, the thing in the Wall Street Journal had a great op-ed the other day calling it Hurricane Musk hitting Washington. But when you look at the USAID story, I mean, aside from the, you know, pork barrel spending, wasted taxpayer dollars, whatever you want to call it, there's also some, you know, hard proven, you know, incidences of them supporting groups within Gaza that are directly tied to Hamas. And the fact that no one took a look at that before Elon Musk did is troubling on the surface and at the core, fundamentally wrong.
Well, you know, I heard some reporting this morning that the bigger problem with it, and I think Marco Rubio said he could never get answers when they would call these people up before the Senate. There never seemed to be any accountability for it, is the money laundering aspect of it, that the funds would be allocated to an NGO for one thing, but once the money got there, they completely lost control over how it was used. There was no financial accountability at all, and therefore it ended up back in the pockets of groups that in many cases were politically motivated in what they were doing or how they were spending the money.
You don't say. Shocking that would happen. And right, the auditing, I mean, look, you know, you raise a really important point, Mark, and that is at the end of the day, what Musk has put into play is rife, you know, wasting of USA dollars wherever they end up. But at the end of the day, Rubio understands that Musk can't shut USAID down. I know it looks like that, but he can't. Only Congress can do that because Congress created USAID in 1998, and Congress put it under the supervision of the State Department. So you would have to have Congress vote to shut the doors on USAID, and it's not clear that they could get 60 votes because you need to get 60 votes in the Senate to do this. You need both houses of Congress to vote for it. It's not clear you could get there. However, because the law that established USAID and put it under State Department supervision, Rubio can do what's needed, which is to simply go in, audit it, find out where that money went, and clean it up and get rid of the waste.
Griff, I'm taking a left turn here, but I know you had covered that awful crash between the plane and the helicopter. And I've heard now that they've recovered all 67 bodies. The victims' families were able to go to the Potomac and visit the site where it crashed. The most recent thing I heard was that the air traffic controller, one of them had left work early right before that crash. Is there anything more you've heard about that aside from the fact that, you know, we know NTSB is going to be doing a thorough investigation?
You know, Kim, and I'm glad you raised it because I was out of town. I flew back yesterday into National, and as I was leaving the airport, just outside the airport is a makeshift memorial. 67 crosses are now erected there, honoring the 67 people lost. And that I've seen the report you're talking about. And then, of course, what we all know now, which suggests that helicopter was 100 feet above where it's supposed to be. And, you know, I don't have any latest insight, and I haven't covered it for a couple of days, but I do know that the NTSB member Todd Inman, that I talked to a lot and interviewed back when I was covering it right at the moment it happened, he's really been pushing, saying, listen, just have patience. We're going to lay it all out and we're going to make recommendations so it doesn't happen. And the dirty secret is that many times the FAA and the NTSB are not friends. And so in the wake of these crashes, the NTSB makes recommendations and then the FAA says, okay, thanks. And then they don't adopt them and they don't take their advice. Now, not always, but sometimes, as I understand and talking to NTSB people, that's the case. And so my hope is that whether it was in that air traffic control tower, whether it was logistical mismanagement on the part of the, you know, Black Hawk, whatever it is, hopefully, particularly in this unique airspace, unlike any other in the country, they will adopt all of the recommendations. And, you know, we are going to have to give the NTSB the patience they require, because it's not going to be weeks or months. It could be a year before we fully find out all of the details.
Yeah. You know, I only read this story myself today, but they're still not 100% sure where that helicopter was, right? Isn't that ground data, ground radar that's telling them that? They were still trying to crack the black box and decode what was in there because it was damaged by water. So I wonder, do we know if they've got that information from the black box yet on the helicopter?
We don't know that.
We don't know that. I didn't think so.
It's a great point. Yeah. And that's what, and I think that even if the NTSB may have that, they're not wanting it out there quick and fast because they just don't feel the pressure, the time constraint. They're going to wait until they've crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's on
right.
it. So,
right.
But it's a great point. I mean, you know, different data points are putting it at different locations, and ultimately they're going to have to be able to recreate down to honestly the nanosecond the exact positions, because we have these corridors, as we've all heard about helicopters, that need to fly in this space. You're moving generals from the Pentagon straight across to the, you know, White House and the like. And ultimately, we can't just choose to not have a shared airspace, but we've got to find a way to make sure this never happens again.
Yeah. Griff, are you working on anything today? Are you back at work?
You know, my story is the remember when President Trump issued the executive order ending birthright citizenship, it was halted. It was paused temporarily for 14 days. Now you've got the second federal judge, a Maryland federal judge out of Maryland, that put it on indefinite hold, saying that the president lacks the authority to end it because it's constitutionally protected. And I think ultimately the takeaway there is that this is now on a fast track to the high court, ultimately.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, buddy, thank you. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. And listen, I'm going to be filling in for somebody on Fox and Friends weekend. So if you need your news on Saturday and Sunday, wake up early and tune in.
Outstanding. We'll be watching Griff. Griff Jenkins there live in the nation's capital this morning. Always great to get him on. Couple things we still got to get to here. Some news just out this morning from President Trump. I'll get that to you when we get back here in just a couple of minutes. And it's a very important day today that we have not recognized. We'll get to that when we get back. All right, welcome back. I was trying to play something there, Carlin, and I apologize because I thought I had it queued up, and then when I went back and looked at it, it wasn't there. I really hate when that happens because...
No one's holding it against you.
Well, I don't know. I probably didn't have to mention it, but there was a pause there, and I wanted to explain to people what was going on. So if you've still got... if you've still got us queued up here, I will. I'll get
go
to
ahead.
It here. Hang on. I don't know.
This thing
is malfunctioning over here.
Should we figure out how to solve world hunger? What do you think
feed
the solution
people.
Is? Oh, I like that. Yeah, that's a good plan.
Is
Carl
it?
For president.
Thanks.
Carl for president.
Well, he just solved world hunger.
Feed people.
Did you not hear that?
I did. I've got it, Carl, by the way.
Oh, good.
So here we go. Here we go. This is what I was trying to play coming out of the break. Give it a second. Hold on. Let's get pulling up from the archives.
Hey, Carl, what else?
We've done our part.
Okay.
And as I walk off into the city streets, a final word to the men and women of the Reagan Revolution, the men and women across America who for 8 years did the work that brought America back. My friends, we did it. We weren't just marking time. We made a difference. We made the city stronger. We made the city freer. And we left her in good hands. All in all, not bad. Not bad at all. And so, goodbye, God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Wow. Today would be Ronald Reagan's 114th birthday. Today's his birthday, February 6th. I'd almost forgotten about that. I saw it earlier, and I meant to you know, wish the Gipper a happy birthday. And when I hear his voice, it still sends chills down my spine. It still has the same impact after all these years.
You know how I was doing the history lesson with my parents?
Yes.
I was telling you every Wednesday I would go over to their house. And I'd like to start that back up with my dad. But we were talking about the Berlin Wall and that iconic speech, you know, tear the wall down. Isn't that what take that
Mr.
wall?
Mr. Gorbachev, tear this wall down.
Tear yes. down this wall.
We watched the video of that when Reagan was there speaking and him, of course, delivering that line. And it was neat, you know, because like I said, I didn't care about history. And then to care about it way more now and to watch those videos and see Reagan delivering that speech just meant so much more to me.
Yep, I can absolutely see that. It was, you know, there are parallels here. There are going to be kids 20 or 30 years from now who are talk about being members of the Trump Revolution. I know that's going to happen because of what he's going to get accomplished in the second term. Ronald Reagan had two consecutive terms to get it done. I actually believe Trump will end up being more effective by having his separated by that 4-year period
yeah.
where you saw how bad the alternative was. By the way, the president did put out a Truth Social post this morning regarding Gaza. There was a lot of talk about that. This is what he said this morning about all these questions about who would own it, all that. The Gaza Strip would be turned over to the United States by Israel at the conclusion of fighting. The Palestinians, he says, people like Chuck Schumer would have already been resettled in far safer and more beautiful communities with new and modern homes in the region. They would actually have a chance to be happy, safe, and free. The U.S., working with great development teams from all over the world, would slowly and carefully begin the construction of what would become one of the greatest and most spectacular developments of its kind on Earth. No soldiers by the U.S. would be needed. stability for the region would reign. That's what Trump put out on Truth Social this morning, just about 2 hours ago. So I don't know if that clears up anything for you or not, but that's what he said. By the way, there's somebody online. I want to get back to this because we try to interact with you as much as we can here online. Somebody asked the question, Mark, if you would take a minute to explain tariffs, because people don't seem to understand the difference between tariffs and inflation. Inflation takes a little longer to develop, right? Because you put too much money supply in the system, people overspend, prices go up, you get inflation when there's too much money in the system. Tariffs obviously work a little bit different, and it basically says when your boatload of goods arrives in America, we're going to tack a 25% fine on it, basically, because you're doing the same thing to us. I can remember this was really bad in the 80s, 70s and 80s, because in Japan and places like that, they would put such a tariff on American cars that nobody would buy them. It was impossible to sell an American car in Japan because there'd be a 30 or 40% markup in the price. So tariffs are a direct way to say, if you won't compete with us fairly, we'll do the same thing to you. Now, the impact on prices can be more dramatic because they're being marked up at the border more quickly than, and the inflation tends to be just a little bit more of a slow path. I don't know if that answers the question that we had there on Facebook or not. But again, it's a powerful threat because people stop buying your product when the price suddenly goes up 15%. It's a pretty dramatic issue, particularly on big ticket items. All right, that's going to do it for us. Brian Kilmeade coming up here in just a few minutes. And, of course, Annie and Mark later today. We'll see you back tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.
Get more at 971talk.com.